Welcome, I'm Reed Lessing, and we are at Lectionary at Lunch. I invite you to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 4. That's Deuteronomy chapter 4. And our pericope for study is 4, 1 to 2, and then we skip over to verse 6 and go through verse 9. So let's start reading here. Of course, we know the context. Moses and Israel, the second generation of Israelites, are on the plains of Moab. They have been wandering around now for some 40 years. And Moses, of course, will die. And he is getting his people, God's people, ready to inhabit the promised land. So Ve'atah, which quite often introduces a new unit of thought. And now, Israel, Shema, listen. And perhaps Shema has the idea of listen with the entailment that people will believe, because Paul writes in Romans 10:17, faith comes by hearing. So this Shema certainly anticipates the great Shema in the book in chapter 6, verse 4. Listen to the Ha-Kukim, Ha-Mishpatim. There's really no functional difference between these. The Ha-Kukim would be more of statutes because Chet Kov Kof, this geminate verb, means to chisel or engrave. So these are literally set in stone. And the Mishpatim would be ordinances, coming from the root Shafat, which means quite often to judge, which Anoki Milamed, which I am teaching. Now, let's pause here on this peel participle, Milamed. This is the first time the root Lamad appears in the Pentateuch. And if Deuteronomy is anything, it is a teaching book. In fact, many scholars go back to chapter 1 in Deuteronomy, verse 5, where we have this statement, and across the Jordan in the land of Moab, Moses was successful, Be'er. Et ha-Torah hazot lemor. Moses be'ered. So this appeal verb only appears here in Deuteronomy 1:5. It appears one more time in Deuteronomy. That would be in 27:8. And just one other time in the Old Testament, Habakkuk 2:2. In all of these text, it's clear that Be'er means to interpret, to expound, to elucidate, to make clear. And so this is really what Moses is trying to do. He is teaching, lamading, going back to 4:2, in such a way as to make the Torah clear, understandable, applicable, transformational. So Moses' teaching role cannot be underemphasized, cannot be overemphasized enough. So he's teaching Etkem, going back to 4:2, to do. So this is a good reminder. Biblical teaching leads to action. It's not just a quiver in my liver or an ocean of emotion. It's just not to stimulate me intellectually. Information, if it's biblical, is to transform people's lives. So teaching to do. Lema'on, so that, tichu, you will live when you enter and inherit the land, which Yahweh your God, your fathers, is giving to you. A little clumsy there, but we get the idea. Natan, as It is in this collective participle, masculine singular form, appears over 70 times in the book of Deuteronomy. So if the land is anything, it's a gift. It's free. It's because Yahweh swore to the fathers, specifically to Abraham already in Genesis 12. So the goal of teaching is to do and to live in the promises of God, which cannot fail. Now, verse 2, lo tosifu, so do not add, that's a hifil from Yasaf, it's a first yod, first vav, so in this case the vav comes back, but it is elided between the tau and the samek. So this hifil, in order that you, you will not add upon the devar, in this case devar is synonymous probably with Torah, which I am commanding you, and you will not diminish or subtract from it, memenu, and certainly this has an echo in Revelation 22, 18 and 19, how the Bible kind of ends without adding or subtracting to the revelation of Jesus, which he gave to John. Lishmor, this is very standard Deuteronomistic vocabulary, to keep watch, observe the commandments of Yahweh your God, which I am commanding you. So, going back to verse 1, when you have Ve'ata Yisrael Shema El Ha Kukeka, and I said Kukeka is literally chiseled in stone, verse 2 indicates that this Torah, finally, I think we would say the Pentateuch, is what Moses is expounding upon here, shouldn't be added to or subtracted from. Yes, God is still speaking. His word is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. So says the Hebrew writer in 4:12. But God is not speaking in such a way as that there is new absolute revelation, which is certainly what some churches want us to believe. No, this is definitive. This is one time. Don't add and don't subtract from it. And what will this do? So now the makers of pericopes want us to drop down to verse 6. And you will shamar, and you will asah, so you will keep watch, observe, and you will do, because he here, this is the way the Pentateuch spells the third person feminine singular, independent personal pronoun. So it, but it's going back to the Torah, right? It is a chokmatkem. It is your wisdom. Chokmah doesn't necessarily mean intelligence or IQ or brilliance. Chokmah means that people understand their role in the universe, that there's a God and I'm not him, that I'm an employee and I'm not the boss, that I'm parents, not the child. A chokmah orders my life in terms of my relationships and how I am to live out this vocation in these different relationships. So the Pentateuch is something that gives me wisdom and your understanding. And this is interesting. Le'enei ha'amim. Before the eyes of the peoples, the Gentile peoples, Israel is a missionary movement. This begins with the Great Commission in Genesis 12, 2 and 3. Israel is to attract the nations by their ordered life and their understanding. So these nations, Asher, Yishma'un, who will hear of all the Ha'kukim, Ha'ela, all these statutes, and they will say, now rock here normally means something like only. The LXX, the Septuagint, has adu, which is probably closer, and they will say rock, not only, but surely, behold. Here it's functioning as an affirmative, an adversative, an asseverative force. Surely am hakam, so hakmah, the noun, came early in the verse. Hakam is the adjective. Surely a people wise, and then here's another adjective from the same root being, which we had earlier in verse 6 as a noun. Surely a people wise and understanding, hagoy hagodol hazeh, this great nation. So Israel is to be great, not numerically. If I was preaching on this, I'd make sure I'd underscore that, because you have the John 3:16 of the Old Testament in Deuteronomy 7, verse 7. They were chosen not because they were the greatest of all the nations or more numerous, but because Yahweh kashaked them, he set his affection upon them. So great in a sense, not numerically, and not even militarily at this point, but great in their understanding and wisdom. Kimi goy gadol, because who or what is a great nation, which to them Elohim kerovim, which God or gods, plural, but probably in context, whose God, lo Elohim, whose God near a lav to him, like Yahweh our God, in all our calling to him. So not only will the nations be attracted to Israel because of Israel's statutes and ordinances and wisdom and understanding, but that their God is near to them. And certainly in the context of Deuteronomy, the nearness of God is best articulated in the next chapter, chapter 5, where Moses recounts the Sinaitic revelation, where God came down and he dwelt among his people at Sinai. And Moses was the great mediator in chapter 5 as he discusses that. Specifically, where he talks about God coming down in fire, and Moses spoke to him face to face. That's in 5 verse 4. So this certainly invites the preacher to speak incarnationally and sacramentally, that this is a God who comes down to be with his people. He dwells in the Mishkan, or Ohel Moed, the tabernacle, the tent of meeting. He dwells in the Solomonic temple. He refills the temple when it's rebuilt, according to Ezekiel 43. And of course, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So this is our God. He's certainly wise, understanding, faithful, but he's also incarnate. He's available. He's accessible in our calling to him. Not like the gods of the nations who are simply forces of nature or so transcendent that they have no time to care for the needs of their adherents. No, this is not Yahweh. Already he's near in chapter 2, verse 7 of Genesis, where like a potter he comes down and gets his hands dirty as he forms Adam out of the Adamah, Adam from the dirt. He comes down in Genesis 11 to see what's going on at the Tower of Babel, on and on. So I would encourage the preacher to speak incarnationally as much as you can in the Old Testament, before you get to the marvelous message of John 1:14. Well, then verse 8, and what is a great nation? Who to it, kukim umishpatim zadikim? So the statutes and ordinances are zadikim, they are righteous. Now, how do the nations make this claim? They don't have Sinaitic Torah. They don't have the Ten Commandments. But they do have God's law written upon their heart. We need not go to Romans 1 and 2 or Acts 17 to get a theology of the natural knowledge of God. It is all right here. God has given human beings enough natural revelation that they are able to make these assessments concerning Israel. Certainly, we would say, nuancing this a little bit more, that the second table of the commandments are inscribed on every person's heart. So when they see truth, there is the ability to say that this truth is Zedek. These ordinances are Zedekim. Bekol ha-Torah hazot. In all this Torah, which I am giving, I am placing, notain before you. Hayom! certainly the major accent in the book of Deuteronomy. It's today. It's not tomorrow, it's not yesterday, it's not in a week from now. No, today, if we go to Psalm 95, if you hear his voice, don't harden your heart. This is the day Yahweh has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. God's salvation is near. Paul, quoting from Isaiah 49 and 2 Corinthians 6, says, I tell you, today is the acceptable time. Now is the time of salvation. It's urgent, this Hayom feature in Deuteronomy. Only, here is Rock in its more frequent sense, as we had Rock, of course, earlier in verse 6, where we translate it surely. Here is only. Here's a Nifal imperative from a Shamar. Only watch yourself. And guard your life. Now notice he's switching from the plural to the singular you. So this is the way the rhetoric works in Deuteronomy and other parts of the Hebrew Bible, but especially in Deuteronomy. You have the church Catholic where it's you, and they, and your wisdom, your understanding, you see that in verse 6. In Deuteronomy 4. But now it's you. Now it's individual. Now it's up close. It's personal. It's for the community, but the community is only as strong as each individual person in it. Only you watch yourself and watch your life greatly. Lest you forget, oh my, Deuteronomy 8 is filled with this kind of preaching, that the land would be so good, so abundant, so rich, that Israel would simply have full stomachs and forget. Lest you forget the devarim, the words, the events which you saw, your eyes. So apparently, what events? What are these ha-devarim? They would be the events in the wilderness. They would be the manna, the quail, the rock that followed them. Paul reminds us the rock was Christ in 1 Corinthians 10:4. All of these great devarim, all of these events, we cannot assume that he's speaking about the Egyptian Exodus, right? Because most of these people had only heard about that. Their eyes hadn't seen it because that generation is dead, right? Lest upen yasuru, lest they turn from your heart all the days of your life. And you will make them known. Here would be a hifil of yada. Let's kind of parse this. Hifil perfect, vav consecutive, second masculine singular. Still, he's talked to the community. Now he's focusing in on each one, in this case, each male, as the head of the household, with a third masculine plural suffix there, mame. And you will make them known. Liva neka, to your children, ulivne vaneka, and to the children of your children. So notice how if you focus in on the teaching aspect, that Moses teaches Israel, Israel teaches the nations, and the parents teach their children. And that is a recipe for life and life abundant. So thank you for joining us. I hope this is edifying for you personally, as well as you share this with those in your midst.